Welcome to the Oxley Bond MotoGP podcast.
It's another Oxley Bomb MotoGP podcast. Back again, me, Matt Oxley, old journalist, even older ex-racer, and my podcast partner,
Peter Bomb, ex-crew chief, ex-data guy, and nearly as old as Matt.
Yeah, you're never going to catch me up. Catch me if you can. Right, what are we going to talk about this week is something that a lot of fans talk about, you know, and we like to kind of keep talking about what you're talking about, is rivalry. You know, racing is all about rivalry. That's the whole fucking point of it. You know, everyone wants to beat everyone else. No one wants to get beaten. And, you know, racing, oh my God, you know, you think of all the racing rivals we used to have. Schwanz-Rainey, which was one of the all-time best, because for many years they just fucking hated each other. I mean, really hated each other. And, you know, from the times they were racing in the States until they kind of got to really know each other in their later in their careers and they became more friendly. And then Doohan Crevier, and then Rossi. Rossi Biaggi, Rossi Gibbono, Rossi Stoner, Rossi Lorenzo, Rossi Marquez, you know, the whole of Rossi's career was defined by rivalries. And that's one of the things that made his career so fascinating. There was always a good guy and a bad guy. And, you know, even though Rossi wasn't always a good guy, most people thought he was the good guy. So that was fascinating. And where are all the rivalries now? I mean, where are they? Where are they, Peter? Why don't we see them anymore?
Why? You're looking at me. look at Rossi, because Rossi really understood for himself that it worked only good for him if he was really hating the other guy. And he was like the last guy thinking like that. At the moment, they're all just so matey with each other. They're literally neighbors. They're training on the ranch the same. They do everything the same, more or less. So that's weird. And I still think there's two things, I think, behind it. First of all, it's a cultural thing. I think the sport has evolved and it has become much more a sport. And what I'll see is the younger generation now approaches it as a sport and less as a fight. And it used to be a fight. I mean, in the worst, you know, in the bad old days, it was a fight for everybody. So that's one thing. They approach it more as a sport. But I still think they leave something on the table there. I think it really, I can imagine completely that it helps you to do the last 2-4% of extra danger, extra training, extra challenge if you really really hate that guy that's in front of you. I think they miss out on something there by not hating each other. Weird to say, actually.
Yeah, it's weird to say. I mean, I kind of have a few. I mean, like everything, there's always a few reasons. I think nowadays the racing is so intense and there's so much pressure that, you know, hatred and anger is a kind of negative energy. And I think a lot of the riders think, okay, I need to be positive. I need to be positive. I'm always going to think about the good things. It's like at the moment, you know, a lot of the riders are angry about a few safety things, but they never really talk about them because they don't want to distract themselves from racing. They want to just think about the racing. So I think that might be one reason. They just want to live in a world of positive vibes.
Yeah, you're right. Whilst when you're saying that, I get a glimpse of what's probably also behind it. Nowadays, the riders are so much more involved in the whole thing of setting up the bike and the logistics and the whole team and the mechanics and everything. It used not to be like that. They just turned up, asked if the tire was new or old, and they were praying that the jetting was okay, and then they go out for the fight. But now they are all the time busy with the racing, and if you're all the time busy with the racing with a negative energy, that's bad. So that could probably explain some of it as well. But I still think, you know, the last proper fight, I mean, Marquez and Rossi, it didn't start like that. It started like there was a big respect. There was also a big age difference, so it didn't seem to be such a real danger in the beginning, but it turned out to be really, really bad. And I remember speaking to one of the senior guys at Yamaha at some hotel bar, probably a bit later, and he told me, in a couple of years they will just be laughing about it. Now they need it to go faster, but in a couple of years they will be laughing about it. I'm not so sure, because that one went really deep. Eh? The way Rossi attacked Mark finally, the way he chose to attack him, made a big wound, mm-hmm. And that's probably not going
to
heal.
No. If I go back to the Rossi-Lorenzo rivalry, in 2010 when Rossi would come back from breaking his leg, and I should say, by the way, that we're doing this in a MotoGP media center, so if you can hear lots of people,
yeah, we're not alone, there's 150 other people.
If you can hear people chatting in the background, that's just the way it is. And we're at a race. Races aren't quiet places, so you know, just put up with it. I'm sorry.
It's the quietest place we could find walking around in the paddock.
Yeah. We've been round and round trying to find somewhere completely silent, and there's nowhere completely silent at a racetrack. But going back to the Lorenzo Rossi thing, Rossi'd come back from breaking his leg in 2010. Lorenzo was on the verge of winning the title, and they went to Motegi, and they had that crazy battle for third place.
Whoa.
And Yamaha went fucking berserk. They took Rossi into the office and said, you must not do this. You know, Lorenzo, you could have taken him out and he could have lost the world championship, you know, our world championship. So please next time pay more attention. And Rossi said, yes, I will. Next time I will beat him while paying more attention. So you know, you had all these brilliant stories from rivalries, you know, and without the rivalries, you lose. I mean, you think back to Muhammad Ali, you know, all of his career, you know, arguably the greatest sporting career of all time was defined by rivalries, you know.
Is a good example, actually, because it thrives on it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you really have to hate the other guy because you're
smashing going in there if you don't hate him.
You're smashing him in the face. You know, you can't smash somebody that you like in the face. So, I mean, I think there's also other things like a the fact that a lot of them are neighbours now. You know, half of them live in Andorra. I mean, literally, you know, Quadraro and Alish Espargaro, they're literally neighbours. They live like 2 meters from each other, and there's pole further down the street. And then you have the other guys in Italy, Tavuglia. You know, you got Banaya and Bezzecchi and everybody. So you know, they are all actually.
You said a name there, Bezzecchi. That's the one I can imagine having a fight and don't give a shit. I think even yesterday he had a coming together. I think he touched Ike Lekuona's bike. He said, I can't do anything for it. It was not my fault, whatever. He seems to me the character that that is hard, you know, for other guys. He can accept as well. He could probably be like a controversial guy, but then inside Tavuglia, no, because when it's as long as it's inside the academy, it's inside the academy. You can't do that. But hopefully there comes a point that it is really in between them, in the academy themselves. I'm curious what's going to happen then.
We need to think of some way of kind of making Banaya and Bezzecchi into enemies, don't we?
Exactly.
How can we make that happen? We can... it reminds me of an old story many years ago when Schwantz and Kaczynski and all those guys were around and Schwantz hated Kaczynski, as did, you know, a lot of, you know, rightly or wrongly. I'm not saying Kaczynski's a bad guy, but a lot of the riders didn't like Kaczynski. And Schwantz offered, I mean, it's pretty appalling really, but kind of quite funny. he offered anybody that would sleep with Kaczynski's girlfriend $10,000.
Okay.
So, in the old days, they had different ways of destabilizing each
I'm
other.
I'm not sure if that really happened in the end, if somebody did it. But
no,
I'm sure
I don't think
they
did.
They pissed in each other's helm. That's true.
Sorry.
They pissed in each other's helm, or they organized that
well,
stuff happened.
Anthony Gobert piss in Neil Hodgson's helmet.
Exactly.
So you know, you went back to these things where crazy shit was going on. But this again brings us back to the fact that they're not madmen anymore. You know, that you have to be mad to ride around at 220 miles an hour bashing into each other. But you have to be a scientist now. You know, that's the number one thing. You have to be a scientist. The way they ride the bikes now, they don't just go out and ride around and, you know, give it full gas and use all their talent and everything. They do, you know, I think we've said this before. The engineer says, you know, you can stick your knee out at this corner. You need to take, I know you want to take this line at that corner, but you can't. You have to do this because
of error otherwise.
So they're becoming scientists, you know, and the more, you know, are scientists exciting, crazy people? No, they're not generally, you know, not many of them.
But are you saying that the fact that they need to be to do so much thinking about other things, that there is no room for a rivalry? I don't think so. I just look at Marc Marquez. You know, he's in a shit place at the moment, but as soon as he's not, and even when he's in a shit place, he makes it immediately a fight and he doesn't take any prisoners. So he, for me, is an example that he didn't start the rivalries because he needed them, like Rossi needed them, and Rossi used to succeed with it, with Max Biaggi, with Gibernau, with all the others, until he didn't anymore. Mark is just always like that, and his brother a little bit the same. It's less on he's less on the cameras, but also Alex Marquez is very, very hard. He can accept, but he also gives out hard to other riders. I mean, everybody is a little bit scared of these two guys on the track, which works for them, because if you're in a position in qualifying, you look behind you to see who's there, and if you see it's Alex Marquez, you like shitter a little bit, fuck, because what he's going to do? He's mad. So it helps Alex Marquez. It helps Mark Marquez. Mark is like clever enough to be the scientific guy and the enemy, you know, the hard guy as well at the same time on the track.
I mean, it reminds me of speaking to, I think it was Jeremy McWilliams some while ago, and he was just talking, it's all about intimidation.
Yep.
You know, you're basically, what these guys are trying to do is intimidate each other. And if you intimidate enough guys and then you stuff it up the inside, you know, so you're going into a corner and this guy that is, you know, is crazy, stuffs his front wheel up the inside, you go, uh-oh, I'm going to get out the way. Yeah. If you know that he's a bit of a pushover, that you're more crazy than he is, you're just going to lean on him and know that he's going to disappear. Yeah. So it's all about establishing that reputation where other riders fear you. You need to do that. And obviously, Mark has done that. You know, the last thing you want to see on the last lap is like plus 0.1 Mark Marquez on your pit board, because you know something's going to happen.
Yes.
You know, whatever you do, you could
so
still
he,
break.
So he already have you at the balls before you even doesn't move. Already you're sort of not scared, but extra careful, which puts you in a weak position. And that's what it's all about. That's the sort of thing that happens all the time. They speak only about it in very small circles, the riders, but it starts in free one. Mm. It starts actually when a new rider arrives in the class. That's what he does.
Pay attention.
Pedro Acosta next year in MotoGP. Pay attention. He will be involved in incidents, and it can start in free one. It can start on the day one in Sepang of the test. He will already mark his place. Or not. But okay. Not.
Funnily enough, I interviewed Acosta on Thursday. Never interviewed him before. And what a cool guy. You know, what a great guy. Very interesting and quite cocky, but in a nice way. Not in a bad way, in a good way. You know, you've got to be cocky. Of course you have. And he was saying, what's happened to all the rivalries? We need to make this happen again.
He was telling you.
So I think that basically suggests that that's what he's going to do next week. And also, you mentioned Biaggi just a minute ago. And what he used to do was run people really close. He used to... could be on the slowdown lap. I think he did it to Rossi on the slowdown lap. He like goes past going 50 miles an hour faster, like 2 inches
millimeters
away.
Yeah.
And he did the same to Nicky Hayden in Nicky's rookie year. So Nicky's at a new circuit, riding around, trying to work his way around, and Max would come past like 2 inches away, going 50 miles an hour faster. So that was Max's way of intimidating people, of thinking this guy. But, you know, it can also, if you do it to the wrong person, like Rossi did to Mark Marquez at Sepang, and the thing, if you do it to the wrong person, it can backfire on
it
you.
It does.
You know? Yeah. And for sure, I think Biaggi probably a bit backfired on him a few times.
So maybe, Matt, that's to finalize this rivalry thing. Maybe that's the wave we are in at the moment, that maybe by coincidence people were like nice to each other, because if you're not an asshole to the other ones, it's not only bad. You don't show... It does not only mean that you probably push over, but it also means you have respect, because that's the word that we heard a lot about riders. You know what they say? They say the word respect a lot. So what that means is, if you show the proper respect, if you're racing a guy, you race him hard, but you always leave him enough space, you know, not to be immediately in the grass on his ass, it will come back to you in a good way as well. The next time he's racing you and you're in a shit position, he will give you also some space. So it can be beneficial to be nice, but at some point, especially when we start to fight for a championship, Matt, that's when the things really get very transparent, very, very clear.
Yeah.
There's no hiding. When there's 2-3 races to go and there's 2 people left fighting for the championship, it needs to get nasty.
It must
get nasty.
There's one before we've got something else to talk about, kind of related to rivalry, but before we move on to that, the other big thing about rivalry is social media. You know, Twitter, blah, blah, blah. You know, and Rossi was saying this a few years ago, you can't say anything anymore bad, because it'll go onto social media and the whole thing will explode.
And then
it'll explode. And then suddenly you get a million people saying, I want you to die.
Yeah.
And then another million people saying, I want the other guy to die. And you know what I mean? It gets really, really nasty. I mean, can you imagine if social media existed when Schwantz made that offer for somebody $10,000 to sleep with Kaczynski's girlfriend? Can you imagine what would have happened with that? I mean, it would have just gone poof. You know, I mean, he was saying it in a jokey kind of way, I think. You know, I mean, you know.
He made a point.
To make a point. He was just, you know, that thing that he said about Kaczynski, he's like a cheap watch, he'll fall apart at some point.
That's,
you know, all those kind of things.
Yeah.
All those sort of things that he used to say then, you can't say anymore, because it's just going to blow up in your face. And suddenly you've got this huge social media thing, and then you've got all the journalists asking you about it, and it's taking up headspace. You know, you want to...
Exactly. Speak to Maverick Vinales about social media.
Exactly. You want to concentrate on racing, and suddenly you say something controversial, and you've got 100 journalists saying, what about this? What about that? And you think, fuck, just leave me alone. I want to get on with my racing.
Exactly.
So these are all reasons why rivalries don't happen. And what we want to talk about next is one of the guys that was quite good at making rivalries happen, who's not with us anymore in MotoGP, is Cal Crutchlow. And, you know, he was a British rider. I was a British journalist. So, you know, I used to talk to him a lot and interview him a lot. And Peter worked even much, much closer to him than I did. He was
only 1 year, a long time ago, but yeah, a full year together and a championship winning year, that creates a bond. You know, we never pass each other without ciao and hi and how are you, because you can't. You did a year together,
sure,
which was special as well. So yeah, there's a lot of Kruzel stories going around.
Yeah, but I mean, you should remind people that you didn't just spend a year together. You won the 2010 World Superbike Championship, World Super Sport Championship together. So, you know, I mean, he's just a great guy. I mean, I like Cal. He's some fans don't like him because they just see this really super cocky guy. But that's his race face, you know. And then obviously he's got his dad, Deck, you know, who was a proper old rock and roller, an old Triumph, you know, a superstar. I mean, just hilarious guy. So a great couple. And obviously Peter, having worked with Cal, has got some good stories. Go and throw some good Cal and Deck stories at us. I hope Cal's listening.
Yeah, well, about the rivalry and Carl, he did it in a clever way, because we were together with the other rider was from France. I leave it there, and France and Britain, that can be a sensitive thing. So, but he did it in a nice, clever way, because I think he was clever enough to understand, if I create a fight here, it's going to be a really long year for the whole team, because then you divide the team. So what he did is made sure everybody, also the mechanics from the other rider, liked him, but he did it genuinely. You know, he's such a likeable, you have to like him. He can be like a little bit of an asshole, but in a funny way, and in the end, when he leaves the room, you like him. Mm. Even when he said something that made everybody laugh against you, still, you like him. So he was clever in that way that nobody hated him, maybe like him a little bit more than the other rider, but also he was clever enough to organize things like, you know, he was organizing gifts for the whole team, even for the mechanics from the other side, just because he got a Nokia sponsorship deal. It didn't cost him any money, just a couple of telephone calls, and then everybody was walking around with a Nokia because of Carl. He did it good, but the way he delivered them, that's the story. You know, we went to a Brno test at that time. We were testing a lot, and Brno was a good track. So, but then Deck was telling us before that one of the things that Deck did was building aeroplanes and fly them himself. But Deck didn't appear to be very like rich. So what he did is he bought 3 or 4 kit aeroplanes that you have to build together, sell them, except so the last one he had for free with the profit, put it together, and in this case he flew the thing from England to like 2-3 small airfields in Germany to pick up the mechanics, then did an extra lap on the top of Brno, so everybody knows he's coming, and then he just picked up mechanics in Germany on the way to Brno, and when they arrived he had a big pack of Nokias for everybody. So that I can't remember the results of the test, just that it was really, really funny, because Deck arrives with his own plane, and for Kruzel it was completely normal. Yeah, my father comes with a plane, you know. Normally you ask, when is he touching down, or when is he coming, or caught me by car? Nah, he comes to play. Yeah, we all come with the plane. No, he comes with his own plane. Ah, okay, thank you.
But so, he still does some work for Lucio, doesn't he? Flies Lucio around in, but it's not a private jet. It's it's a prop plane, but it's still a lot easier to get from A to B than by you know.
That was probably the hardest bastard I ever met, because he was already a bit old then, older than I am now, but he was not scared to drive the van like 36 hours straight in a row, go to Valencia, and when we arrived with the plane, he already built the box, put the bikes. The only thing he didn't do is warm up the bikes, you know. That's Deck. He told the stories like when he was young. He did an endurance racing with a TZ700. That's a two-stroke Yamaha.
I think you're talking about an R7. He's not that old.
No. The way he told it to me, it was with a two-stroke.
Maybe it was, yeah. Okay. Okay.
But that's even more bizarre, because two-stroke, you can't. But then Carl was already there in the van traveling with him. So you do the 24-hour with 2 or 3 mates, whoever is fit. And in the end, he drives the van back himself alone as well to England.
Crazy.
Deck was a star. And he didn't say a lot, but he understood everything that happened. He was just sitting in the corner of the box, and he knew there comes a tire. Okay, there has to come a lap time. If not, I don't need to say anything, because everybody knows.
Yeah.
So that was Deck.
And Carl was never afraid when he was here in MotoGP. I didn't know him before that, but he was never afraid to criticize other riders who he felt, you know. I mean, he never held back. He was, you know, we need him here now, you know.
He will stir up the thing.
Throwing things around, because he was fantastic. And I remember when Argentina 2016, so it's the second or third race of the Michelin era, and Scott Redding's going around on the Ducati when he was on the Pramac Ducati, I think it was, and just having fun spinning the rear up, just going around spinning the rear left, right, smoking it left, right, and finally...
Because there was no grip.
And finally the tire goes, explodes.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a tire company to have a tire explode, that is, you hit the fucking panic button. So Michelin hit the panic button, and they got rid of that tire, which everybody kind of liked, and they introduced a harder carcass rear tire, because they couldn't afford to have, you know, you can't afford to...
That's
the fact that
tire
Redding
rule.
Was just mucking about,
yeah,
didn't matter. They'd had an exploding tyre. So they brought in a harder construction tyre, which basically finished Danny Pedrosa's career. He couldn't ride the tyre because he's so light. He couldn't compress it. And you look at his results up to 2016 and then post-2016, and you'll see what I mean. At the end of 28, after 2 years with that tyre, he retired. And then when Michelin brought the softer rear tyre in 2020, when he was KTM test rider, when they went to Red Bull Ring, he was faster than all the KTM full-time riders because he was like, wow, this thing is just perfect for me. Because it actually compresses and deflects and gives him the grip he needs. So Cal was very vocal in his criticism of Redding, you know, and no one else was. And you know, I mean, I like Scott Redding, but he shouldn't have done what he did then, you know. And I like Cal because he's a bit of an animal, you know. I mean, that's why we're here, to what crazy animals. You know, he called himself the honey badger for a while because isn't the honey badger the most dangerous animal in the world or something? And, you know, he says what he thinks and he does kind of crazy stuff like, you know, he's got a bit of money, and when the Trump election came along, he bet, you know, he did what any bloke with a decent brain, I mean, he's clever, much cleverer than me, you know, he bought loads of, when Trump got in, the dollar just tanked, so he bought a load of dollars, and then obviously 2-3 days later, everybody kind of recovers from the shock, and the price of the dollar goes back up.
And he was eager to tell you guys how much money he made, and he cashes in, and you just think,
good on you, mate. You know, I mean, why not take advantage of that? You're just playing. The system isn't your fault. You're just playing it, you know?
Yeah, we became world champion in the 600. And before I knew it, he sent his crew over to Grazini in Italy because he was sure he was going to do Moto2 and become world champion there, because that's easy. Moto2, I can do that, he said. So we were all having a job interview with Grazini in Misano. And the next thing we know is that Yamaha called Crutzel. They said, well, where do you think you're going? You have a contract. You wanted us to put in your contract, if you become world champion, you have the right to do world superbike. So you have the right, but also you need to go world superbike. Sorry, guys. Okay, he has to go superbike.
Yeah, no,
he was already ready to sign, and he sent us over there because you want to bring his crew with him, because that's the same car, eh?
Sure.
He could take the piss out of you in the box, but he understood when you did your job properly, and you know how important it is to have a good crew around you. I go Moto2, but with my own people.
Yeah,
but no, didn't work out.
I mean, when we used to do debriefs with Cal, you know, if somebody asked him a stupid question, which probably included me, you know, he would just go for you and just say, what the fuck is that? Yeah, Why do you ask me that stupid question?
At some point, you're afraid to ask.
And I actually like that. I like that. Yeah. You know, I like, and you know, he would always say exactly what he thought. He didn't care what anybody thought of him. He would say exactly what he thought. And obviously, no one's right all the time. But as a journalist, you can't ask for anything more than a rider to just speak from his heart. I won't name names, but some riders, when you interview them, you can see there's a kind of mental kind of
they're filtering everything,
filtering,
thinking
thing.
About it,
they're
filtering,
thinking and then thinking, no,
to be
I'll say this
correct,
exactly, and that's just so boring. And when he won his first Grand Prix in the rain in Brno in 2016, you know, he said, why did you win? He said, well, just because all the others were pussies, you know, okay, you know, but. And he didn't really mean it, but it's a great quote, you know. I mean, and it's a great quote. So he just said what he wanted, you know.
And then, you know, we went off from rivalry to Crutchlow. But thinking about it, Crutchlow was very good in stirring things up. But in the end, nobody hated him, and they were also not afraid, because on the track he was correct. He didn't do any stupid moves. When somebody did, he was clear. He was the first to say that was a stupid move. So he was not hypocritical about it. So it's easy to come to him over rivalry, but in the end, he didn't create a lot of rivalry. He just created respect. And he gave respect, not every day, but in the end, when you put him on the table, he said, that's really, really good what these guys are doing. He was just better than me. Point.
Sure. I mean, that's the thing about Marquez, going off track, but Marc Marquez, you know, when he fucks over a lot of riders on the track, but whenever he gets fucked over,
he never says a word.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because, you know, there's nothing, and there are lots of riders that fuck other people over and don't say anything and say, well, it was just a normal racing move. And then when they get fucked over, they're like, oh, the bad
cry baby.
You know what I mean? Which is just, but Cal and Mark, not like that. You know, if they get messed up by another rider, they just take it on the chin, because you're an idiot if you complain about somebody doing to you what you would do to them.
What you're doing all the time and get away with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The last time I saw Cal was at a posh do in London last winter, at a posh club in London, I won't name it. And we were in the bar late at night, a few of us. It was me and him and McGuinness and I think Hickman and a few of us all getting sort of, let's say, refreshed. And without us, we were all sitting there having a nice time, and without knowing, the bar closed, right? So we look up and we've run out of drinks and the bar's shut. And we're like, oh, holy shit, what are we going to do now? Oh. So me and Cal go wandering around the kitchens of this club, looking in all the fridges, trying to find some wine or beer or something. And we can't find any. So we come back to the bar, and I'm looking at the bar and I'm thinking, I can break into that, no problem. So I end up breaking into the bar to get some booze and to carry on the party.
Well, that's a secret.
But the only problem was, now, he wasn't involved in any of the bad stuff. He let me get into trouble. He's not stupid.
And he was invading Sean Mears' camper in Valencia after his
World Championship. Yeah,
exactly. To steal the trophy.
Exactly.
So
when he gets two
beers, he needs to do nasty.
Most racers who don't drink on a regular basis, they have a few beers and they're pissed, you know.
Yeah, well,
I broke into this bar to get the booze and everything. What I didn't know was that the club had CCTV.
What a surprise. How old are you?
So 2 days later, I get this phone call saying,
we
have this CCTV image of you breaking into the bar and stealing this. I think I got away with it, but I was in a bit of a hole for a while. So we went from
rivalry in Kretzlow to burglary.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, to me, I mean, when was this? It was just before the first race, actually, in March. And you remember when four riders got injured at the first race, first sprint race, the first Portuguese
Most
Grand
of them
Prix.
Were riders.
And I wrote an email back to this guy who was saying, basically, you broke into our bar, what are you going to do about it? We're going to send you a bill for the damage and everything. And he said, and for the two bottles of champagne you sold. And I said, they weren't champagne, they were just cheap bottles of white wine, so you need to adjust the invoice. I forgot what I was going to say now. But I said, look, you know, you have to understand, if you invite motorcycle racers into your posh club, stuff's going to happen. We're not like car racers. We run a little hot because, like, four guys are in hospital out of 22 after the first race. So, you know, we go a bit crazy because that's just who we are, you know. And that's why I love motorbike racing, because it is crazy. I mean, it's not crazy enough in my mind anymore. MotoGP, as we were just saying, it's all bloody science and technology now.
That's why we started.
Yeah, I always think it should be law that the riders are not allowed to leave the track until Monday morning, you know.
Yeah, no private jets 5 minutes
exactly,
after the race.
So they all have to go out and get drunk together. I think that should be the rule, you know. I think there should be a rule.
We need to go to World Superbikes. They still do that over there.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but coming back to the real beginning, the rivalry, because we wondered about that. Yeah, the reason it's less now, there must be two faults. I think there is not a guy there out there hunting for skills, probably coming. I think Acosta, Bezeki can do it, Mark can do it if he needed, but he has his own rivalry, you know, he's hard enough. But needing an enemy to go faster, for some people it was really necessary, like when you're comfortably winning already almost everything like Rossi did, then it's logic. But I don't want anything bad to happen, but I think it will be nice if there will be a little bit more controversy between the riders. They're all like always agreeing with each other about many. I was going to say I don't really like it, but honestly I don't believe it.
So
something is stopping them from saying,
I think it's social media. I think it's wanting to keep the positive vibes going. We'll just finish on an even older story. I interviewed Gary Nixon quite a few times before he died.
Oh, Gary,
he
was maybe we have to
just
introduce
a wonderful,
him.
A wonderful, wonderful,
wonderful
guy. So, I mean, Gary Nixon, hugely famous racer in the 1970s, raced Factory Kawasaki's. He was going to come to Grand Prix, but he crashed at the Suzuki test track, testing the new RG500 and smashed his legs to pieces. But really super funny guy and a real rock and roller. You know, I mean, the last time I saw him alive was at the Indianapolis MotoGP round, and we went and where they had the Indy Mile dirt track, you know. And I went down to turn one, and King Kenny Roberts and Nixon were sitting there on a thing of beer, drinking beers, and Gary turned around to me, and because Kenny didn't really approve of that sort of stuff, and showed that he had a big joint on the go as well.
Okay.
And he you know, when he came over to, because he knew the Haydens, and when Nicky came over, he said, I want to be your gopher, you know, for his first couple of seasons, and because he knew the ropes and he just wanted to help, you know, and help Nicky. And he said to me, he said, these guys are going too fast to party, you know. That was his way of explaining it, a really nice way of saying it. And that was in 2003. We're on 20 years later, and MotoGP is what, 2-3 times more scientific now than it was back then. So that's the problem, that these guys are too busy to have fun. you know, and therefore that does affect the way they behave, yeah. and that affects yeah. the rivalry yeah. as well, you know.
Yeah. But in the end, I still wait for Pedro Acosta.
Yeah, yeah, no, 100%.
He's the guy that put some needles in left and right.
Exactly. We need Pedro Acosta in there, and we need Marquez on a competitive bike again, and he'll be up there sticking it up the inside here, there, and everywhere. That's what we need.
So if this championship is going really between Pecco and Bezzecchi, nothing going to happen really, because they train every day together. But if Martin is involved, we probably go back to the old Spain-Italy controversy, because that has been big as well, eh? Time sure. of Simoncelli, Bautista. Yeah, that was yeah. like a Spain-Italy yeah. thing as well, yeah. which helped a lot.
And Martin has the speed. He just needs to get it together to do yeah. it consistently.
More know? Regularly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was
okay,
it.
Everyone. We're done. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Peter. Thanks to Peter's son, Sam, who is the producer. And we'll see you next time. Cheers. Bye-bye.